Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today, my guest is Tatjana Solny. And it's a remarkable story. Her novel is called The Lotus Eaters. It's a first novel. Unlike most first novels, it was reviewed on the front cover of the New York Times Book Review and later selected as one of the 100 most important books of the year. And more than that, it appeared on the 35th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, a novel about Vietnam, about women in Vietnam, in particular a woman in Vietnam. And tell me, why Vietnam?
It's been kind of an obsession for me my whole life. My mom was an interpreter in Naples, Italy for NATO. And when she came to the U.S., she had an offer to come to the U.S. for both of us to become citizens. And we were sponsored, and she got a job at Fort Ord Military Base in Monterey, California. So I spent 2 years in the late 60s when I was a little girl living on the military base. And I think that's the only clue that I have that it became such an important part to me that when I grew up, I joke that I was a Vietnam groupie, that I read everything. And I was fascinated by that time. And I wanted to understand some of the experiences that I'd had. I never thought that I would write about it, but it was something that was deep inside me. I was in kindergarten and I had, you know, my playmates, their fathers would be shipped off. And the trauma of seeing the families disrupted. Of course, some of their fathers didn't come home, and then, you know, the families would disappear a couple of days later. And it's kind of really heartbreaking and traumatic as a child, so that even though you don't understand what it is, you just know it's a hugely emotional time for the adults around you.
Where were you from originally?
I was born in Salzburg, Austria.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And your mother came to America with NATO?
She got a job through somebody who worked at NATO to work there. And she actually told me that she had an offer to work, to go to Saigon in 1970 to work for the Red Cross, to be a liaison there. And she had me, and she showed me the letters. It was a colonel that said, you should come here with your little girl, and you can live in Saigon and all. And she said she finally realized, I can't do this with a child. And so that was the end of our experience with the war.
Now, a good deal of the novel concerns itself with a combat photographer who is in part inspired, I guess, by Dickie Chappelle and some of the other women photographers who were there, like Catherine Leroy and Kate Webb. But what interested me is that the book is about the development of her art. When she comes, she has not finished college. By the way, the heroine's name is Helen Adams. She arrives in Saigon wanting to be a freelance photographer with only one photography course, and she has to ask how to load film. It's sort of like a novelist beginning, learning how to focus on the subject, center on it, learning contrast and conflict. I mean, to what extent did her experience there parallel yours as a writer?
That's interesting. I'd never thought of it that way. I think the female photojournalists that I learned about, when I had read all the material, and when I learned that they had been in the war, these women were very, consummate professionals. When I suddenly found that I had a lens to go into the war with, and I thought that this would be an interesting experience. My character is nothing like those photographers, and she is naive, and she doesn't know what she's doing. I felt like I had to have her start at ground zero and grow so that this is how I could take the readers on the journey of seeing the war and of understanding it so you go along with her.
And seeing the war is also hand in hand with seeing the country, Vietnam, and making a distinction between seeing the war and seeing Vietnam. That Vietnam is not the war.
Yeah, that's exactly why when I realized that I could have a woman who's an outsider, there were no women there, they were kind of excluded, and so she would be the lens. Her experiences would be outside of the military, and she would see the country and everything. And I really wanted to get that into a book because I hadn't seen that exactly done in that way before.
What kind of research did you do to learn about the experience of a photojournalist?
I scoured everything. When I decided I was actually going to try to write about the war, it was a terrifying prospect because, you know, so many people have actually been there, and I just knew I had to have it all right. So when I decided that I was actually going to do that, I really focused on the nonfiction, and I read all the Life magazines, and I read all of the books, the nonfiction books by photojournalists talking about what it's like to cover war. And of course, the technology has changed, but the experience hasn't that much. So even learning from some of the more current photographers. And so I just tried to get all the material I could, documentaries and stuff. I think as a writer, you're like an actor. You're pulling all these pieces to you and putting yourself into this character and into this world that you create.
I read that in assembling this book, you only learned just before the book was published that there actually was a man who had been working for Time magazine who was a spy for the North Vietnamese. That is to say, if you're reading fully enough into the material, you intuit things before the historians know them.
I think it is strange. I had known that he was a double agent, and when the war ended, they invited him to, you know, leave the country so that he wouldn't be killed because he was such a close ally of the Americans, and he said, no, I'm staying. And then all of a sudden they see a photograph of him in uniform, and he's shaking the hands of the president of the country, and they can't believe that they felt betrayed. But since I had finished writing the book, two biographies came out that had a lot more detail in them, and I didn't have that. So even though my character isn't identical at all, Lynn isn't identical to him. Just the situation as a novelist, you just use a little bit of material and then you build a life out of it. Sometimes now, it parallels reality.
Now we have so far two characters. We have Helen Adams and we have Lynn, a Vietnamese photographer's assistant, who really is much more expert in the field than many of the other photographers working for wire services and magazines. And we have a man who has been in Africa. His name is Sam Darrow, and he's what, a hardliner. He's covered war for many years. He's won a Pulitzer Prize before coming to Vietnam, and he is the man that our heroine Helen wants to meet. And meets her first night in Vietnam when she's exposed to what it's like to be a woman among professionals.
I didn't give her one reason for why she wants to go there. I think she has a couple of life reasons to go there, and there's also just this, she's a young girl and this is an adventure for her. The motivations are murky even to herself while she's there. And so when she goes there and she sees him, it's just like a magnet. She thinks that this is what I want and this is what I want to become, and their relationship grows out of that. It's like she's maybe seeing herself in the future in him.
I'm talking to Tatiana Soli about her novel, The Lotus Eaters, which has been published recently in paperback by St. Martin's Griffin. And one of the things that's very impressive is the sexual nature of the relationships between the three central characters of the novel. They're in love with different things. In love with war, in love with their profession, gradually in love with one another, in love with a brother who's been killed in Vietnam, in love with a wife who's at home, in love, in the case of Lynn, the Vietnamese, with a dead wife, May. I wanted to ask you to characterize the nature of need in this novel because it's so powerful.
I think sometimes in the reviews they consider this like it's a war novel and it has also romance aspects, which I kind of take affront to because I think it's natural that people, they're in their environment, they really, they reach out. They need something to hold them through what they're going through. They're going through such violence and the idea that there's a good possibility you might die every day. And so I think these people are all damaged. They form these incredibly strong bonds, and it is human love. but it's not a romance on top of a war story. I think this is out of their deepest need.
And in this novel, war is a kind of love, or vice versa. There's a hunger, at any rate, for true experience. And I think many people, you know, wondering what love is, when they say they're looking for the real thing, they're talking about a love that will tear them apart, a love that will feel like war.
I think, I mean, it's kind of easy with the comparisons with the Hurt Locker that you're addicted to danger and you're addicted to war and adrenaline. But I think it's deeper than that. It's that you're drawn into something that is so frightening, and in the process of getting closer and closer to it, it does take you over. I have a line early in the novel where one of the characters says, you know, this will change you, and Helen doesn't believe that. And of course it does change her, because you can't go through those type of experiences and be unmarked.
Helen is, in a sense, an avatar figure. That is to say, what we know traditionally of women and war is, of course, Helen, who is the woman whose face, according to Marlowe, launches 1,000 ships, and she starts the Trojan War. To what extent, since you have a Homer reference too in the title, mm-hmm. The Lotus Eaters, did that sense of war as an eternal, as a mythic condition play its part in what you were writing?
I definitely played on that with her name, and in the beginning, when she first meets all of these, you know, male photographers, they all think that she's going to disappear fast, that she's going to be scared and go away. And I definitely wanted to make her, the Helen, you know, is the face that launched 1,000 ships, but she didn't do anything. She was the passive. She was the subject, the object of the war, but she was just the symbol of it. I wanted to have a character who gets down and gets dirty and goes through the patrols and goes through the moral complexity and is affected and is not passive. Traditionally, war novels, it is all about men, and the women stay home and they are just on the sidelines. And so it was very important for me to have her on the ground level, and that she goes through the big experience that a normal war novel would have a male character go through.
And the Vietnamese character, Lin, sees her as part of a different tradition, the tradition of fairies and dragons. Can you tell me about that?
One of the things that I really wanted to accomplish is when somebody finishes the book, they understand what that Vietnam, like you said, was a country and a place, not just the site of a war, a backdrop. And so I wanted to show the culture and what the village life was like. And the best way to understand a people is through their literature, through their fairy tales, through their poetry. He's deeply rooted. He's from an educated background. He wanted to be a playwright or a poet. Life and the catastrophe in the country has taken him away from all of that. But he thinks in those terms. And so of all the people there, ironically, he's suffered the most, but he's the most removed from it all. And he tries to give meaning to his life by looking at it in those terms, literature, books, poetry, seeing her as you know, a goddess.
Now, in the course of writing the book, how often did you go to Vietnam?
I had never been.
You've never? I can hardly believe this.
My husband and I just returned. We went in November and stayed for 3 weeks, so that was the first time. It was a very special trip.
Because this book strikes everyone, not just reporters, but some of the best writers about the Vietnam experience, Tim O'Brien and Robert Stone, as being one that has a visual and tactile sense of the country. How did you develop that?
I tell people, you know, the book took a long time to get published, and I didn't have a lot of support for it in the beginning, so I really felt like this is how I was going to learn how to write. And I really, created a world from scratch for myself. And I was concentrating so hard about portraying the 60s and portraying combat and portraying not Vietnam that you can necessarily go visit, but the Vietnam of these characters that are totally falling apart. I mean, the Vietnam that Helen's Saigon, when it's falling, is totally an emotional state to me. And even when she goes into the villages, it's this moment of peace in the middle of great violence. I just felt that it was just different than just being a travelogue. I didn't want to write a documentary. So it wasn't unconscious that I didn't go there. But after I was really far into the book, like 5 years out, it was a unique world unto the book.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Tatjana Solny, author most recently of The Lotus Eaters. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Tatjana Solny about The Lotus Eaters. You're very generous in your author's note that you read everything that you could get your hands on about Vietnam, every movie that you could see. What are particularly the novels and more literary works that became influential?
I think... I tell everyone, you know, lots of times when you're going around to talking to people at bookstores and stuff, some of the people haven't been exposed to the literature of Vietnam. So I say you have to start with Tim O'Brien, and you can't end with Tim O'Brien and have an understanding of the war.
Which is your favorite Tim O'Brien?
I mean, The Things They Carried is an incredible book, and the reason it's a great book is because it does have so little combat in it. It's all about the war inside of a soldier's soul. And it's so moving because of that. You learn in writing that, you know, less is more, that you don't have to throw every type of a thing there. You have to have an incident and have meaning, and he does that. And so I feel like I would have never tackled writing from a soldier's perspective, because I feel like he's done it the best that will ever be done. And so I find his books incredibly, incredibly important.
And after that?
There's this interesting feeling that I wanted to capture about Vietnam that was, I think, unique in Dispatches, Michael Hare. He said that Vietnam, I can't remember exactly, I think, is the happy childhood that none of us might have had, but they went there. And even though the soldiers that were there, you know, they were exposed and some of them died, it was just an adventure, and there was this playfulness and there was this excitement level to it. That's a little bit counterintuitive, because you only think of the dark side. And there was a little bit of a light side too, and I think he captures this manic energy, maybe just the energy of the 60s and the music and everything, and that Saigon was a civilian city besides being a war city.
In this book, one character dies, one character lives, and one character comes back from the dead. And you'll pardon me, but I keep thinking of this book as being something brought back from the dead. It's coming from a past of America in its perhaps most disastrous foreign entanglement, at a time when no one wanted you to write it. As I understand, you went out with a proposal and no one was interested. Vietnam was old. The audiences were either military or male. And then in the 10 years it took to write the book, Vietnam became the prototype for American involvements of the sort that we're living in right now. Has that informed your writing as you watched other Vietnams coming into existence? Did you feel that your writing was becoming in some way prophetic?
That's a really interesting observation. When I first thought of the novel, it was in 2000, and it was just more of a exercise. I would say it was a more of a historical novel only. And now it's become, obviously, the world has totally changed in those years. In that decade, our involvement in the world has totally changed. And when I started the novel with the fall of Saigon, and now with current events, when I have to do readings and I read it out loud, it sounds like it could be with, you know, name changes, it could be set today in Egypt. So it's an amazing experience, and I think it shows you that if you go deep enough into your subject matter, it'll always be contemporary.
It seems to me that not just veterans of the Vietnam War, but veterans of any war would be very responsive to this novel. What have the response has been like?
I'll be candid with you. I was kind of scared because I thought the people that had been there would be feel offended that somebody had treaded on their territory. And I feel like I tried my best to get it. And this material is extremely important to me for whatever, you know, strange way that my soul was attracted to it. It was really important to me. And I have gone to readings, and a lot of times the vets will stay till everyone else is gone, and they come up and they start talking to you, and they talk to you as if you're a friend, that you understood their experience. So I don't think they care as much that you didn't experience it. It's that you honor it and that you showed the truth of it.
Yes, there's very little time spent with the people who are protesting the war, and yet the book says that any great war photograph is automatically also an anti-war photograph. Is that what you felt about the book as well?
I feel that very much so. I mean, because of my background, because I was around the military, I mean, I don't paint anyone as they were. Nobody was on the bad side. I think everybody lost equally. And so I really wanted to portray that. And, of course, the journalists also lost because they went there voluntarily, and they had the same problems that the soldiers had coming away from it and never being able to leave it behind.
In the course of the book, the characters define journalism and what the art of combat photography is. What is that art?
When I was writing it, you know, I knew Helen was going to be a journalist. But then as I got into it, of course, she had to be a photographer, because a photographer has to go out into the battles and has to be part of it with soldiers. It's the same thing almost as having a gun. You have to be that close to it. And I think it's such a complicated thing. Like when you're a novelist, once you have written your drafts, you become very dispassionate and you back away from material and very cold. But it's almost immoral to be a photographer and to being photographing, you know, tragedy and violence and to not be moved by it. But of course they can't be, because it's kind of like being a doctor. If you get totally emotionally involved, you can't do your job.
Well, she even feels by the end of the book that her job is not so much to find the hugest pile of bodies, and she sees many such piles, but to find a picture, however small, of a human instinct, a man putting a candy, a lifesaver, on a little girl's tongue through the fence, through a barbed wire fence. And she says, if that seems to contradict the terrors or horrors of war, so be it. We have to find signs of the human state that persist during a war.
I think when I was writing it, there's so much incredible darkness, and I made that effort that I really wanted to find the flickers of light in there for all the characters, because, I mean, that's a metaphor for life, that you have to find, you know, the thing that will keep you going, the thing that gives you hope, the thing that that makes the world continue. And so I had to have those moments.
There's a terrifying scene, almost one of the final scenes, where we have entered a new phase of combat. Helen is going with some, what can I call them, but rake hell journalists, mm-hmm. Over to Thailand to see if they can come out the other end rather than flying home after the fall of Saigon. And they, in turn, while smoking weed, are captured by a group of child soldiers, much like the African soldiers we're reading about now. And she's been having dreams throughout of being surrounded and jostled by a circle of children. It feels almost as if whatever honor was left in the Vietnam War has now drained out, and we're in the future of warfare at the end of the book. Were you foreseeing the times we're living in by the time the book ended?
I think the interesting thing about that, it's like Helen has vowed that she's going to stay till the end and watch the fall and do the handover, and what they were expecting, the bloodbath, does not happen. But then Cambodia beckons, and she goes from a war that was the most media saturated with the pictures and the videos, and we all feel like we know what Vietnam was. She goes to the place where there is absolute nothing. There is nobody. The press has been thrown out, so it's like the darkness. And I feel, for me, it was a metaphor that she's finally descended at the closest time to pure evil. The ending was like the really hardest part for me to get through, because you feel like you can't have the scale go to evil, that she has to make her way out. And of course, she makes it out physically, and she does make it out with her soul, but a huge price to be paid for that. But she does have to make it out. You do have to have life go on, and that she survives.
I've been talking with Tatjana Soley, author most recently of The Lotus Eaters, published by St. Martin's Griffin in paperback. Thank you, Tatjana, for joining me.
Thank you so much.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from The Lotus Eaters at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.